still wasn't sure what to make of the sudden rush of chemistry, that white-hot spark that had come out of nowhere, but I also wasn't too worried about it. "I'm actually going to another wedding with him in a couple weeks," I said, still grinning, and that made her face transform into an expression of relief. "You have no idea how happy I am to hear this," she said, looking more like a friend than a boss, "because I really do think that if you get your personal life on track, and people around here know it, there's no way you won't be a VP in the very near future."
Chapter 15. Max. Sophie. Any business coming our way? I was sitting on the patio at my parents' house, drinking a glass of after-dinner scotch with my dad. They'd had everyone over for a cookout, since it was a gorgeous Saturday that felt closer to July than May, high of 85, and we were watching the Cubs on their outdoor TV. I texted, "Who is this?" Sophie. "Your partner in crime?" Me. "You're going to have to be more specific." Sophie. "I put a bride in a headlock the last time we were together." I texted, "Again, you're going to have to be more specific." She was good at surprising me, and this was no exception, because she fucking called me. Sophie Steinbeck. I set down my glass before walking away from the patio and lifting the phone to my ear. "Hello, Steinbeck." "Hello, Parks. How's every little thing?" "That depends. Why are you calling me?" "Just wondering if there's any objecting to be done." "I thought you said you have a life." "I do, but I suddenly feel like saving someone else's." I suspected there was more to it than that, but I rather enjoyed figuring her out. She was like a stubborn puzzle who didn't want to be solved, which made me want to toss all the pieces into the air, and then solve it anyway, just to piss her off. "I actually got a call last night from an old friend's cousin's bridesmaid's aunt, but I'm turning it down." "Why?" she asked, sounding somehow insulted that I'd pass. "Why would you leave an old friend's cousin's bridesmaid's aunt hanging?"
"Because it's a black tie wedding about an hour away. Very wealthy people, very stuffy event."
So that sounds awful. No more awful than the Thunder Rolls wedding we attended last month.
True. I said, noticing that my mother had come outside and she and my dad were watching me. And the woman did offer me 10 grand.
"Oh my God, 10 grand? We are so doing it. Go rent a tux this instant."
"I have a tux."
"You do?" she asked, sounding shocked. "Why?"
I looked down at the grass and ran my shoe over a soft spot. "Sometimes I go out."
"Whoa," she said. "Are you a billionaire? Are you high?"
"Accept the job and text me the details. Then I'll tell you if I'm high or not." "Sorry," I said, looking up as my nephew barreled out the back door carrying a little Tykes driver. Once the course closed for the night, my parents always let Kiefer run around on the golf course greens behind their house. "I'm sitting this one out."
"No."
She sounded determined. "Let me convince you. Where are you?"
I wasn't expecting that.
"At my parents' house. Location, please."
"Are you serious right now?"
I asked, alarm bells ringing just a little. Doing another wedding with her was a terrible idea, in spite of what I'd said that night. She and I were both staunchly anti-relationship, yet we'd almost kissed after the last wedding. Somehow that seemed like a recipe for disaster, and I needed to pump the brakes, regardless of how many times my brain kept replaying the near kiss.
"Just drop me the address. I'll pick you up, drive you around the block until you agree to do what I say, then I'll push you out of the vehicle so you can return to your familial shenanigans."
"That sounds a lot like kidnapping."
"Nut up and go for a drive with me," she said,
and I could hear the smile in her voice. "I only need 5 minutes of your time." I opened my mouth to say sorry, but instead said, "Will you take me to Whole Foods and then drop me in my car?"
"What? Do I have to?"
She sounded like I'd confused her, which was fair because I'd confused myself as well. What the hell am I doing? But it occurred to me at that moment that it'd be the perfect chance for me to see her one last time and cordially terminate our one-and-done partnership without hurting her feelings. I think yes, I said, watching my parents watch me while pretending to watch their grandson. You can yammer about things I'm ultimately not going to do, and I can get the cat food and milk I don't feel like stopping for on my way home.
I don't yammer, and you'll do it. Now drop the location, she said, sounding unfazed, because I'm on my way.
You're getting a cart for two things? I always get a cart. I yanked one out of the line of carts and turned it toward the produce section as the motion-activated doors closed behind us. It's nice having something to lean on. Sophie made a noise like she disagreed as she started walking beside me. She was dressed like she'd just left work. Nice pants, pumps, blazer, and it seemed on brand for her somehow, working late. Something about her just screamed driven. Of course, that could have to do with the overstuffed work bag I'd had to move off her passenger seat in order to fit in her car. The only way I'm going to consider your proposal, by the way, I said, glancing over at her, is if you add things to my cart that you think I should eat. Eyebrows went up, and her mouth quirked just a little.
How many things?
I thought about it for a solid half second. 11.
But aren't you just getting cat food and milk? She asked.
No, that was a lie, I said, grabbing a bag of grapes and setting them in the cart. This is my monthly grocery run.
Wait, aren't you going to taste one? She asked,
her eyebrows scrunching together as she looked at me like I'd just committed a crime.
What?
The grapes, she said, her eyes wide as if she was talking to a moron. You're not going to try one? Before I buy them?
Yes,
she said, still giving me the same you're making a colossal mistake look. No, I am not, because they aren't my grapes to try until I pay for them. Was she serious? You're messing with me right now, aren't you?
Absolutely not. You have to try them to know if they're sour.
That's theft.
That's not.
Aren't you in HR, Steinbeck? Aren't rules your life's work? I suppose that was part of what made Sophie so damn interesting, the way I could never figure her out. But this one was blowing my mind a little. You can't tell me you're a grape stealer, because I refuse to believe it.
It's not stealing. It's checking for ripeness, she said, shaking her head as she took a grape from the bag and popped it into her mouth.
These are good.
Now I'm going to have to tell the checkout clerk that I owe them for one additional grape.
Are you going to have them weigh one grape so they know how much to charge you? She teased.
I suppose I will.
I cannot wait to witness this absurdity.
Her lips slid all the way up into a huge smile that I really liked.
Also, you only get groceries once a month?
Sadly, yes. It's never intentional, but that's the way it shakes out. I snagged a bag of spinach, a head of cauliflower, and a carton of mushrooms. I purchase groceries with the best of intentions, but after a few days of careful eating, I get sick of cooking and slip into sandwiches and takeout for every meal.
Leaving your vegetables to die in the fridge? She prompted.
R.I.P. this very spinach, I said, dropping the bag into the cart. It's a terrible system. She grabbed a container of pineapple. I said, I actually hate pineapple.
It's not for you.
Who's it for?
Me.
She tilted her head and said, if the 11 things I add to your cart are destined to die in your fridge, then I'm going to select 11 things that I like so I can save their lives by rescuing them from your bags and taking them home with me. I don't like tricky people, Steinbeck, says the man who tricked me into being his grocery shopper and delivery driver.
Fair.
I grabbed a handful of green peppers and set them in the cart.
You're not going to put those in a bag?
No.
Do you know how dirty grocery carts are?
As dirty as the shoppers who fondle the peppers with their filthy hands.
But the carts also sit outside in the elements. Birds poop on carts.
Just like the peppers before they were picked.
At least tell me you scrub them.
The peppers or the birds? She just sighed, so I said, until my hands bleed, don't worry.
So,
Sophie cleared her throat, and I could tell she was about to launch into her presentation.
This wedding.
Should I get tilapia or salmon? I pushed the cart toward the seafood department.
Neither, because you won't feel like cooking them, so you'll throw them in the freezer where they'll go to die.
That's exactly what usually happened. So, canned tuna? Good call. She was unfazed by my distraction. Why are you so hell-bent on not doing it? The bigger question is, why are you so obsessed with making it happen? I reached for a freeze-dried salmon fillet, but Sophie smacked my hand and gave me a head shake before saying, I very much enjoyed the rush of saving someone from a lifetime of marital hell, and also I could use $5,000. But you didn't know about the 5K when you called me. True, but now I do. And who says I'd give you half? I was the only one invited, remember? Because they don't know about me yet. You'll give me half, she said, grabbing a bag of veggie straws from an end cap and throwing them in the cart. And you'll thank me for being so good. You might offer me more. Won't, I said, turning down the canned food aisle. Nope, she said, putting a hand on the cart and guiding it toward dairy and frozen. Do you have other plans this weekend that conflict with the wedding? No, I said, watching as she started tossing Greek yogurts into the cart. So there's no real reason you can't, right? No ex-lovers in the bridal party or any underlying reasons? There are two real reasons, I said, meaning it. My tone of voice must have changed, because she stopped shopping and turned to face me. The first is that work has been a real bitch lately, so a stressful event isn't how I want to spend one of my two free days. And the second is that you will only make it more stressful.
Sophie. Me? I looked up at him. He was so tall, and wondered what the hell that meant. What the hell does that mean? He crossed his arms. We've been thrown together in a few bizarre situations, which makes the fact that we're essentially strangers easy to forget. But the reality is that you don't know me, and I don't know you. So running around with a stranger adds to the stress. Oh, come on. I've already done my social media creeping, and I'm sure you have as well. Yes, but what does that really tell you about a person? A lot, I said, feeling mildly offended that he seemed to have reservations about me after we'd already hung out a couple times. I turned the card and pushed it toward frozen foods. I've learned everything I needed to know, and I'm guessing you have too. Yeah, but have you ever done online dating? Gone on a blind date? Of course I have. I opened a freezer door and started grabbing my favorite frozen lunches and chucking them into the cart. Who hasn't? Then you know that there are a lot of people in the world who seem cool when you first meet, but once you get to know them, they aren't people you want in your life, right? You're afraid I'm a weirdo? I asked as I stood on my tiptoes but still couldn't quite reach the Amy's Chili Mac on the top shelf. You should be afraid I'm a weirdo. His voice hadn't changed, but it was closer. Above and behind me, as his hand reached for the entree I hadn't been able to grasp. In an instant, everything in my brain went silent as I became aware of the fact that I was trapped between the freezing cold of the frozen foods case and the warmth of Max's big, hard body behind me. I watched as his hand grabbed the box I'd been reaching for, and for some reason I couldn't explain. I turned around. My body was mere inches away from his as he looked down at me with dark, questioning eyes. Butterflies went wild in my stomach as the moment lingered. Paused. The cold air at my back did nothing to cool whatever was firing between us. I blinked, looked at his Adam's apple as he swallowed, and then I grabbed the frozen chili mac from his hand. As if I hadn't noticed the inexplicable electrical moment, I said, Oh my God, Max, I want to object with you, not become a permanent part of your life. He watched me for a second, like he was processing information, before moving back to the cart and saying, It just seems like a terrible idea to inject a stranger straight into your life, don't you think? The stuff of thrillers, especially when there's money involved. I could have a rap sheet a mile long and you could, like, enjoy puppeteering as a hobby. So you're afraid of... What, that I'm going to rob you? Kill you? Fall for you? Also, puppeteering is a deal-breaker? Absolutely it is. Agreed, actually. God, I just needed to go to the wedding with him and have photos for my boss. Why was he making this so difficult? Well, what if we get to know each other better? I'm sure if we hang out, you'll see I'm incredibly normal. You'll want to do the wedding just to spend time with me. The narrowing of his eyes told me he was about to say no, so I blurted, Tonight! Now! As soon as we finish grocery shopping, let's go over to the wine bar on the other side of the store and we can 20-question the shit out of each other. His smirk returned. Why wait? Let's wine and 20 while we shop.
Chapter 16 Max. I was going to do the wedding. I had no interest in stopping the 20 questions game early because I was having fun, but shopping with Sophie had reminded me of how level-headed she was. We might have nearly kissed, but this woman was fully capable of being my partner without things getting weird. So, I'm sure it sounds like a lie, she said, nearly glowing with contentment, but I am genuinely, truly, so damn happy to be single. The freedom to do whatever I want, to go wherever I want, to do things only for what I get out of them, I'm obsessed with it. I'm not sure I'll ever be willing to lose this kind of independence again. Does that mean moving on from Stuart is getting easier? I asked, hopeful because I fucking hated how sad she sounded when I dropped her off after the wedding. Not always, but my melancholy over my foolishness doesn't negate how spectacular my independence is. Makes sense, I said, grabbing my cup from the front of the cart and taking a gulp of my brandy Manhattan. Now, question number 19. Sophie took a sip of her wine, grabbed a bag of frozen French fries, and then said, If you could go on a date with a celebrity tomorrow and have an actual chance because of cosmic magic, who would it be? We'd already covered careers, colleges, families, pets, and love, so it made sense we were finishing the game with magical dates. That's a tough one. Right? She tossed in the fries and said, By the way, that pile is mine. Our groceries are commingling? Gross. Answer the question, she insisted. Maybe Zoe Deutsch? Ooh, good choice, she said, nodding. Why her? You like redheads? I shrugged. It'd have to be someone who didn't take themselves too seriously. Someone fun. She seems as real as someone can seem when you don't know them in real life. Sophie pursed her lips. I can see that. Same question, I said, nudging her with my elbow. Who's your famous dream date? Charles Leclerc, she said, without even pausing. Who the hell is that? I asked, picturing some period piece dramatic actor. Formula One driver, French, maybe? Hot. Is he fun? I asked, for some reason amused by her definitive answer. He is in my head, she said cheekily, giving me a half-grin that was becoming familiar. She was a huge smartass, and I really liked it. I really liked her, honestly. Number 20, you perv. I tossed a box of cookies into the cart. If you could only watch one professional sport for the rest of your life, what would it be? Football? She rolled her eyes. Duh. Yeah, I agreed. Same. Number 20 for you. Sophie tucked her hair behind her ears and asked, Hooters or Twin Peaks? She was ridiculous. Are those places even still in business? No idea, she said, but let's pretend they are for this question. Okay, well, I'm pretty sure this is a trap, I said, laughing because there was no doubt in my mind what her opinion would be on those establishments. But I can't answer because I've never been. She gave me side eye like she didn't believe me. Really? Seriously, I said, laughing again because she looked so suspicious. I like to keep my food and my body part ogling completely separate experiences. That made her laugh. So classy. Yes, I am, thank you. I realized we'd hit every aisle, a few more than once, but I still wasn't in a rush to leave. Okay, here's your 21. Will you be my objectress for the wedding? Her mouth stretched all the way up into a wide, happy smile. Her eyes were crinkled at the corners as she said, Oh, I so will. It was settled, and things seemed fine as we loaded the car and rode home. But the electricity flared right back up when she dropped me off. We'd just finished transferring the groceries from her trunk to the back of my truck when she looked up at me and said, Well, this was kind of fun, Parks. It was, wasn't it?
She nodded, and I saw her eyes wander to my mouth for a brief second, which made mine follow suit. God, I love her red lipstick. Are you thinking about the almost kiss, too? She asked, her voice quiet in the darkness. That shocked the hell out of me, the playful expression on her face and the fact that she was bringing it up at all. The only thing I could say was, that is exactly what I'm thinking about.
What was with that?
She asked, leaning against the side of my truck. One second we were taking a selfie, and the next, boom, chemistry. I couldn't tear my eyes from her gaze as I repeated, boom, chemistry. What's kind of great is since we're both non-believers who aren't looking for love, she said, her words soft, the chemistry is just that, chemistry. It's not a precursor to a relationship or some sort of expectation to be met. It's just chemistry, pure and simple. Chemistry, I repeated, lowering my head. Boring science, she whispered, and took over, rising onto her tiptoes, putting her hands on my shoulders, and raising her red mouth to mine. She tilted her head, parted her lips, and went fucking wild. She dragged her teeth along my bottom lip, ran her tongue over mine, and then dug her nails into my shoulders when I deepened the kiss. Just like that, she was pressed between my body and the side of the truck, which I knew she liked because her hands slid to my neck, and she pulled me harder against her. It was as if Sophie were 100% in it for herself, and that scorched me like a wildfire, flames licking over every nerve ending in my body. Dear God, had I ever been kissed like that before? Her tongue was everywhere, tracing, teasing, stroking, while the smell of her perfume engulfed my senses, like smoke dancing around the end of a cigar. I was hypnotized, drugged, absolutely under the influence of the sexual promise of her wet, hot mouth. My hands came out of my pockets, and my fingers speared through her hair, entirely lacking in finesse and absolutely in it for grip as I held her head still so I could take us even deeper. What in the fuck is this kiss? Kissing Sophie was a headlock that rendered me utterly immobilized. She made a growling sound in the back of her throat, then unclenched the fingers that had been clawing at the back of my neck. She dropped from her tiptoes, and her eyes blinked open. So, she said in a throaty voice that I felt everywhere. She pushed at her hair, touched her upper lip with a fingertip, and then gave me a small smirk. Boom, chemistry, right? Have a good night, Max. You too, I said. But I didn't know if she heard it because she'd already turned away and was walking to her car. I stood there staring as she climbed inside and drove away. What the hell had just happened?
Who was that, Maxie?
My parents were standing on their front porch. When the hell did they come out? My friend Sophie, I said, intentionally keeping my eyes on my keys as I climbed into my truck because I didn't want to watch my parents exchange meaningful glances.
Oh, yeah?
My mom asked, sounding absurdly excited, which wasn't shocking, since she'd obviously seen me kissing someone in her front yard.
Are you two going out again soon?
We're going to a wedding tomorrow, so yes, I said, closing my door. And when I looked at my father, he looked happy. So happy. He looked like a child who'd just been promised a free trip to Disneyland with VIP passes to everything. Even though they'd witnessed one hell of a kiss, I still felt the need to add, but we're just friends, Ma. Obviously, my statement fell on deaf ears, because my dad looked at my mom and actually winked when she said,
you know, friendship is the best foundation for a relationship.
Shit. Leave him alone, Lorna. He's not going to listen to us, my father said. She sighed.
I know.
I've got a good feeling about this Sophie, though, he mused, as if I wasn't there. It felt like he was trying to sell my mom a car when he said, she seems like just the kind of girl to take good care of our Maxie. Pretty, smart, sweet. She definitely has potential. What the hell is going on? He didn't know a single thing about her, other than what she looked like and that I'd been kissing the hell out of her against the side of my truck. I opened my mouth to say something, anything, when he narrowed his eyes and gave me the tiniest head shake before looking down. My phone buzzed, and when I took it out, I was confused for a half second, because I had a text from my dad. I glanced at him, and he was looking in the other direction as if he hadn't just texted me. Dad, I found a boat I want to buy, so for the love of God, milk this thing with Sophie, okay? I shook my head and muttered, what are you talking about? He got out his phone and started texting. For fuck's sake, he was a child. 30 seconds later, his message came through. Dad, if your wishful thinking mother thinks you're settling down and we might be moving this year, she's more apt to let me buy it. Just dangle Sophie a little. Dangle Sophie a little. Brilliant plan.
Chapter 17. Sophie.
Wow, you look like you're going to an awards show, Rose said, clapping her hands together and smiling as I walked into the living room.
Thanks, I said, feeling good as I clasped the diamond stud in my right ear. It was a revolutionary experience, dressing up for myself, and I was a little bit smitten with it. It didn't matter if Max liked the way I looked, or if anyone at the wedding had an opinion on whether or not my boobs were too small or my ass was too big. I liked the black dress, and that was the only thing I cared about. Hell, I wasn't even nervous as I waited for my date. Wild, right?
Who is taking you to the wedding again?
Larry asked, even though he was wearing his Beats, so I knew he wouldn't hear me.
Julian, Rose answered with an eye roll. I already told you that. Which one is he?
Larry yelled, even though I'd literally had zero men come to the apartment since the breakup.
Rhett Butler,
Rose said, at the same time I said, the guy from last weekend.
Sexy asshole,
Larry said, and I wasn't sure what he meant, why he'd decided that, or who exactly he was telling it to. I put on my other earring and was sliding into my pumps when Max buzzed from the lobby. I'd planned on telling him I was on my way to spare him another interaction with my roommates, but Rose beat me to the speaker and said,
"Come on up!"
Which, actually, I thought as I rubbed Karen's and Joanne's fluffy little heads and waited, was a good idea, because I could get her to take a picture of us. Not like it was an actual date, but if I happened to have a photo of Max and me dressed up together and happened to show it to Edie, well, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for my career, right? When the knock came, I pulled open the door and proceeded to almost swallow my tongue, because Max Parks in a black tuxedo was entirely too much. He was stunningly attractive, his tux perfectly tailored to show off that he definitely might be shredded underneath it all. That there was a wide, hard chest under that shirt and jacket, but he looked sophisticated and elegant, too. Like, well, like he should be walking the red carpet at an awards show. Thank you, Rose. This vision that he was, combined with my knowledge of how unbelievably good he was at kissing, kind of made him the sexiest man alive. His eyes ran all over me, hair, face, dress, shoes, like he was taking inventory, and it took everything in my power not to squirm. But I cleared my throat and reminded myself that I didn't care what he thought about my appearance. I was in love with the one-shoulder black cocktail dress, and that was all that mattered. Hi, I said, almost as a question because he was still just staring at me. I don't want to sound like an asshole misogynist, Soph, he said, his eyes still everywhere on me, but I don't think I've ever seen a woman look this gorgeous in real life. How would that make you sound like an asshole misogynist? I felt breathless from his compliment, even though I knew I shouldn't give a shit about his opinion. It was just, well, it was nice. Because it could be taken as a degradation of all women other than you, though that's entirely not how I meant it. Oh, I said, nodding before realizing I'd said nothing about his appearance. You look like a movie star, I blurted. Clark! Not Clark Gable Rose, I interrupted, exchanging an amused look with Max as I said to her. He doesn't have the ears for it. What's wrong with my ears? He asked, feigning insecurity as he scrunched his eyebrows and touched his earlobes. They're too small! Larry yelled, still not removing his headphones. Hey, Rose? I said, reaching for the phone that I'd conveniently placed beside my clutch on the entry table. Would you mind taking a picture of us? Sure, she said, and I could feel Max giving me a look. I knew this was a bizarre request. It wasn't senior prom, and we weren't invited guests at the wedding we were crashing, for God's sake. But hopefully he'd go along with it. I turned around and stood beside him. Wow, has he always been this tall? And ran a hand over my hair as he reached out to scratch Karen's and Joanne's heads.
Say cheese,
Rose said, holding my phone up to her eye. Cheese, I said, and just as she took the picture, I wrapped both my arms around Max's right bicep and leaned my head on his arm, and smiled a big-ass smile. What are you doing? Max asked, barely moving his lips as Rose took multiple shots. What? I said, pretending I didn't know what he was talking about as I posed for the camera. Why do you want a picture like this? He said, looking down at me. Of us dressed up? I asked, blinking slowly like I was a wide-eyed dumbass. You know what I mean, Steinbeck. I tried to think of a reason why I'd want a picture of us like this. You obviously can't think of a lie. Max said, looking amused as we broke apart, and I took back the phone from Rose. So I'm going to assume you're obsessed with me and wish to start a scrapbook. I rolled my eyes and snorted, absolutely not. I grabbed my bag, and as we exited the apartment and walked down the hall toward the elevator, Max said, so if it's not an obsession? Ugh, fine, I sighed, pushing the down button when we reached the bank of elevator cars. I wanted to get a picture with you to convince my boss I'm not a shit show. He cocked an eyebrow. How would that convince her, exactly? Well, I said, stepping into the elevator when the doors opened, she's worried about my work-life balance, and she basically said everyone in the office thinks I'm hung up on Stuart just because I'm mean to him. The air quotes make it hard to believe she's wrong, for the record, he said, pushing the button for the lobby. Although it surprises me that you'd care what people think. Oh, I don't, I said. But she does, and she's the one who controls my potential promotion. Ah, I see, he said, putting his hands in his pant pockets. I thought if I could just post something on social media that makes it look like I have a personal life, and I won't tag you, I promise. Maybe that would help my antisocial image. Instead of commenting, he just looked at me. Not at me, exactly, but in my direction, with his eyes narrowed, like wheels were turning in his head. The elevator dinged, and the doors opened, and it wasn't until we stepped out that he said, you can tag me. I don't have to tag me, he interrupted, looking like he'd made some kind of decision. And we should take a few more photos while we're at it.
Chapter 18 Max. Sophie had a knack for making time fly. The wedding was in Everstom, which was an hour outside of town, but the drive felt like 10 minutes. Of course, that was probably because she was wildly honest, which was wildly entertaining. For example, we'd been in the car for a solid 5 minutes before she said, so the kiss the other night. What about him? I asked, surprised she was bringing it up. Side note, I was being very careful to keep my eyes on the road and not on her, because I knew I'd sounded like a moron at her apartment, but swear to God, I'd been rendered fucking speechless by the sight of her. The off-the-shoulder dress, the sleek, straightened blonde hair, the shiny red lips. She looked like a goddamn work of art. And her black high heels? They had me obscenely distracted. I still can't stop thinking about it, she said, a laugh in her voice. I mean, it was so good, right? It, actually, maybe it wasn't for you, I don't know, she interrupted. But she wasn't saying it like she was insecure about it. She was saying it matter-of-factly.
And I don't care. That was the magical thing about the kiss. You didn't matter at all. Technically, you kind of could have been anyone. What? What the fuck? No, I mean, you're a great kisser and all, for sure. But for me, the realization that I was doing it for myself, that I was getting what I wanted from your mouth, was what made it the best kiss I've ever kissed. In a weird way, I was kind of kissing myself. That is very weird, I said. I understood what she was saying, but still found myself irritated by the brush off. She might have been focused on her own wants, but I'd been the one delivering, damn it. You get what I'm saying, though, right? She asked. And I could see in my periphery that she was taking out her lipstick from her clutch. It was wildly freeing, probably what it feels like to be a man. Not all men are selfish pricks, I said. I care what people think and what they want when I kiss them, just like you. Yeah, I could see that about you, she agreed as she pulled down the visor. Well, take it from me, Parks. My experimental kiss was an eye-opening experience. I glanced away from the road and saw her reapply red lipstick to those perfect lips. The motion was almost hypnotizing, and I didn't want to look away. Except the lane change warning on the truck beeped, jerking my attention back to the road. You know, I said, feeling instantly better as an idea formed in my head. I like that idea. Kissing for yourself. Right? She said, sounding pleased with herself. 10 out of 10 would recommend. So can I try it after the wedding? What? I could see in my peripheral vision that her head had whipped around in my direction. What does that mean? It just means that you've made it sound absolutely game-changing, and I would love to try it. I hit the blinker and merged onto the off-ramp. Can I please kiss you after the wedding and see what it's like to kiss for myself? Of course, she said. But her voice had changed, had gotten slightly huskier. Happy to share my experience with my partner in crime. Excellent, I said, working hard to keep the smile off my face. The wedding was at a country club, and my brand new F-250 was definitely the sketchiest car the valets were handed keys for. As we walked inside, I put my hand on Sophie's lower back, totally out of habit. And my fingers met soft, bare skin. The dress was basically backless. How had I missed that? Sorry, I muttered, and dropped my hand. But even as I flexed and unflexed it, I could still feel the warmth of Sophie's skin on my fingertips. Are you ready? She said quietly, looking up at me as we waited to be seated. You good? Was I good? No. But was I ready for the task? Hell yes. The bride, Ashley, was 21 years old, and her groom was 40. I wasn't one to judge, but that fact alone felt suspect. However, the reason why my old friend's cousin's bridesmaid's aunt had reached out was because Ashley had proof he was cheating, and he was also a controlling asshole. Persuaded her to drop out of college because he didn't want any wife of his to work outside the home. Who would make her life hell if she embarrassed him by calling off the wedding? So I was great with what I was about to do. I'm good, I said, and we followed the usher to the seats we'd requested in the back of the church. The music started, and Evan, the groom, filed out of the back with his groomsmen and stood with a smirk, arms crossed in front of him. They looked like a bunch of middle-aged stockbrokers, giving each other hey bro grins as the harpist started the accompaniment for the bridesmaids' procession. It was surreal, watching girls who looked like they belonged at a sorority party walk toward well-dressed men who looked like they could be their uncles. I heard a sound, was that a growl? From Sophie, and knew without looking at her exactly how she felt about this wedding. When the bride reached the front of the church and the groom took her arm, Sophie tugged on my sleeve. I lowered my head, and she whispered into my ear, "Thank you for doing this." I looked down at her face, at those long-lashed amber eyes, and gave her a nod before straightening back up. We sat, and the minister launched into his love sermon. At this wedding, my cue to object was a little further into the ceremony, so we were subjected to the man's poetic lesson on lifetime love before we'd be able to leave. I glanced over at Soph, and she literally rolled her eyes when he said the words true love. Watching her was hilarious, actually, because she fidgeted, sighed, and even shook her head with squinted eyes when he mentioned soulmates. She genuinely didn't believe in love. A lot of people said things like that, either to be funny or because they were jaded, but Sophie Steinbeck thought love was no different than Santa Claus. Sophie truly believed that the concept of romantic love was a brain trick. I was a cynic who had no interest in trying to find the one, but Sophie wasn't a cynic at all. She was a non-believer. "If anyone here knows of any reason these two should not..." "I do," I said, standing. My face was hot, happened every time, but I powered through. "Evan has been, and still is, unfaithful to Ashley, and was even with another woman 2 days ago." Ashley gasped, as did half the church, but Evan looked unconcerned. Hell, the guy didn't even look mad as he met my eye. He said, "Are you an invited guest, sir?" Fucking ballsy. "He is not," Sophie yelled, standing and grabbing my hand. "And neither am I." I looked down at her animated face and wanted to laugh, even as I wondered what the fuck she was doing. "Well, then I think it's time for security to escort you to the door," Evan said calmly, even looking amused.
"Evan," Ashley said quietly, "what is he talking about?"
"We have proof," Sophie said, "that I think everyone here would be interested in seeing. Not only that, but if Evan will just let Ashley look at his phone..." "I'm sorry, friends," Evan said to the crowd, cutting off Sophie. "But it appears there is going to be a slight delay while we take care of these interlopers. Feel free to talk amongst yourselves or grab a mimosa from the vestibule while my bride and I deal with the uninvited." This was the first time I'd been utterly dumbfounded at a wedding I was breaking up. Was this guy for real? "You too," Evan said, pointing his index finger and pinky in our direction like he was fucking Spider-Man. "A word, please." I squeezed Sophie's hand as we exited the row and walked up the aisle in front of God and everyone. Ashley looked terrified as we climbed the stairs and joined them at the altar, and I gave her what I hoped was a reassuring smile as the four of us walked through the door that led to the back room. "What the hell is this?" Evan asked calmly, the minute the door closed behind us. "I don't know who you are or why you're doing this. Do you know the MASH?" The man had the unmitigated gall to put his arm around Ashley, like they were in this together, and give her a look like he was the teacher waiting for her answer to a challenging equation.
No,
she said, her eyes wide. The poor girl just stood there, looking like his arm weighed 100 pounds. Sophie, who I'd filled in on the drive about all the readily available proof of the affair, launched into it, apparently taking the lead. I watched in disbelief as she raged at Evan, and then I watched as she kindly told Ashley that she deserved better. Evan handed over his phone without protest, which shocked the hell out of me, and Ashley scrolled through the proof, crying and shaking her head. It was done. The job was over. But then the douche surprised me yet again. "Ash, we are not going to cancel the wedding." He said it matter-of-factly and without anger, almost like it was predetermined. "You and I are perfect together. We've spent a fortune on this wedding, and we're getting married. Dry your eyes and fix your hair, because we have to get back out there."
"Evan," Ashley said through tears, "you're having an affair. I'm not going to marry you."
"Come on now," he said, bending his knees so his face was at her level. "Let's be grown-ups. Something happened that was my fault, and I'm so sorry. But we have a wedding to finish and a honeymoon to go on. Don't you want to forget this and move on?" Ashley didn't answer. She just stared at him.
2 weeks in Italy awaits, and then we're going to start building our dream house. Are you going to let a tiny indiscretion destroy everything?"
"An affair isn't a tiny indiscretion," Sophie said. But no one heard her. Ashley was staring at Evan, as if trying to decide what to do, and he was smiling at her in encouragement. If I were a betting man, I'd put money on the fact that Ashley was going to go through with it.
No, Sophie said loudly, regaining the attention of both bride and groom. Ashley, if he won't let you decide this, whether or not you want to marry him, then he will never give you a voice for the rest of your life. If you marry this guy, your future is his to decide. Do you really want that? To be controlled? And what about when you have kids? Do you want them to be voiceless in their decisions? What kind of a life is that?
This is none of your fucking business, Evan said, taking a step toward Sophie. Don't talk to her like that, I said, taking a step toward Evan. Then maybe she should shut her fucking mouth, he said, anger finally finding its way to the surface. His face went bright red and he pointed a finger at Sophie's nose.
Maybe you should shut your fucking mouth, I said, my blood boiling as the asshole glared at Soph.
And put your fucking finger down. What the hell are you going to do about it? Evan asked, still wearing that smug smile.
This, I said. And then I hit him.
Chapter 19 Sophie. I cannot believe you punched him, I said, still laughing even though it had happened a half hour ago. I unbuckled my seatbelt and opened the door. Normally, I would hate that kind of machismo, but I hate Evan even more, so you're kind of my hero. Wonderful, Max quipped, pocketing his keys and climbing out of the truck. Now my life is complete. When he came around to my side of the truck, I put a hand on his chest to stop him for a second. We'd just pulled up to a place called Shirley's Diner, out in the middle of nowhere, because we were both too hungry to wait until we got home to eat. Seriously, though, thank you. He looked down at me, and his eyes traveled over every part of me. You know, he said, his voice deep as his mouth slid into a sexy half-smile, now would be a good time for me to kiss you. I tried to be cool because kissing was just kissing, but something about the way he kept looking at my lips made me a bit jumpy. I suppose. But would you mind? He glanced around the parking lot, and then he said, Come on. Max grabbed my hand and started walking, but slowed down when he realized his strides were much longer than mine, especially when I was in 3-inch pumps. The sun was warm on my face and my exposed shoulder as he led me around the side of the building where there was nothing but evening shade, grass, and bushes. Where are we going? I asked, and then he slowed. He let go of my hand and smirked down at me. Well, if this kiss is all about me and what I want to kiss you up against the wall. Oh, I breathed, unable to form any other words as his big body backed mine against the side of the building. I was sandwiched between him and the wall, and I loved it. Is this okay? He asked, his voice low and gravelly, his mouth inches from mine. Yes, I managed, my pulse pounding as he looked down at me like he had big plans, very big, very dirty plans. And I want your hands on me. His voice was dark as he set my palms in the middle of his chest. If that works for you. Yes, was all I could manage as his hands pressed on mine and his mouth moved closer. His lips were soft when they landed, a teasing breath as they slid against mine ever so slightly, as if convincing my lips to open. It was feather-soft seduction, a barely there sexual suggestion, and it was wickedly potent. Especially when his teeth nipped at my bottom lip and he whispered, "This fucking lipstick." Then everything changed. He sucked in a breath, and his hands moved to rest on the sides of my neck, long fingers pressing into my sensitive skin, while his palms held me in place. His mouth slanted over mine, wide and hot, and I stood on my tiptoes needing leverage. Leverage to lean in as he kissed my mouth like he was famished and I was nourishment, like he'd been deprived of kissing me every minute of his life and was making up for lost time. It was a complete onslaught, utterly unbridled, and I couldn't get enough. Unruly, fucking feral, Max's mouth was primal passion and chaotic lust, and I dug my fingernails into his chest, not caring if I scratched him. I was grasping for purchase as he set me on fire, and any collateral damage was entirely his fault. He kept going, demanding more with his lips and tongue and teeth, and I let him have everything he wanted, my mouth melting into his, helpless to do anything but give in with reckless abandon. When he muttered a curse and lifted his mouth from mine, my mind immediately thought, "Don't stop, don't stop, don't stop." His eyes were dark and heavy-lidded as he looked down at me and said, "You are a genius, Steinbeck." "I know," I said breathily as I nipped at his lower lip, begging him to come back. "You are also," he growled, returning the favor by scraping his teeth along my mouth. "So fucking sexy that it might just kill me." "Hey, settle down there, Parks," I said, dropping my hand from his chest and squeezing out from the Max and building sandwich I'd been the center of, suddenly feeling like it was important to remind him of our roles. Hell, I'd almost forgotten. The kiss was that good. "It was just a kiss, remember? You were kissing yourself and I could have been anyone. If that kiss was sexy, that just means you are one sexy guy." He stared down at me for a few seconds, not saying anything. He was doing that thing again, where I could almost hear the wheels turning in his head, and his jaw clenched together like he wanted to say something, but was forcing himself not to. "Max?" I asked, my breathing still unsteady. He swallowed and looked down at his sideways tie. "You should fix your lipstick before we go in."
Chapter 20. Max. I needed a drink. I followed Sophie as the hostess led us to a booth, and though I needed food, I needed something that burned going down even more. "Thank you," Sophie said as she took her menu and slid into the booth. She'd taken the lipstick off, her waves were back, and the eyeliner was a little smudged, yet she somehow looked hotter than she had when I picked her up. "Thanks," I said, and opened the laminated menu. "I know I should get something healthy because I swore off fast food, but it smells so much like French fries in here that I don't think I can resist." Sophie opened her bag and got out her glasses, sliding them up the bridge of her nose. "You're not wearing contacts?" I asked. "I hate contacts," she said, not looking up from the menu. "I'd rather wear glasses all the time." "Except for tonight." She glanced up and shrugged. "My glasses didn't really match my dress." "So, could you see at all at the wedding?" "Ish," she said dismissively, and went back to the menu. "I wonder if their chicken fried steak is good." It was mind-boggling how she moved on so effortlessly to food after what had just happened. I mean, technically it was just a kiss. One single, meaningless kiss. But dear God, it had been next fucking level. The joke was on me, because I'd brought the whole thing up before the wedding to prove a point to her, to show her that it couldn't have been anyone that made our last kiss spectacular. For some asinine reason, I wanted her to realize the kiss was great because I was a great kisser. Fucking idiot. Instead, I'd proven to myself that I was crazy attracted to her, and she still remained clinical about both kisses. I picked up the water glass and took a drink, parched all of a sudden. "Can you imagine if we had sex that way?" I started coughing, absolutely hacking because the water went down the wrong tube. As I coughed and my eyes watered, Sophie sat there, watching me with her head tilted like I was entertaining. "I'm okay. Thanks for asking," I managed once I got the coughing a little under control. "Oh, I know," she said, closing her menu. "You just sucked your water down the wrong tube when I mentioned sex." "Why did you do that?" I asked, dying to know what she'd meant, while knowing full well I didn't need to talk about sex with Sophie. "I'm having a burger, by the way." "Same," she said, grabbing my menu and setting it on top of hers. "All I meant when I scared you into inhaling your beverage was that can you imagine having sex for yourself without giving a damn about the other person's thoughts or desires?" "That's called masturbation." "Ha ha, very funny, but no,
she said, and I noticed she had goosebumps on her arms. And I don't mean as a kink either, like a dom-sub situation where one person calls the shots. I snorted. There was something funny about hearing HR Sophie saying dom-sub. Okay, forget it, she said, rolling her eyes as her cheeks got a little pink. I guarantee you I cannot, I admitted, which made her cough out a little laugh. Tell me, I'll be good. She looked at me for a minute before apparently accepting my promise and shrugging. I just mean, like, kissing you, last wedding and today, was the most sexually gratifying thing that's happened to me maybe ever. It sucked that she didn't mean it the way it sounded, but I wanted to ask her to say it again anyway. And if you quit being a smartass, she said, leaning forward and setting her elbow on the table, I think you might agree. Like, kissing me outside just now, only interested in what you wanted from the kiss? Wasn't it hot? Was it? Was it hot? I don't know, Sophie, because my brain no longer functions properly and I can't stop staring at your mouth. It was. So all I was saying is that I imagine sex like that, self-centric, would be out of this world. The waitress approached, and Sophie launched into her order while I did my best to appear cool and unaffected. She was so damn straightforward about what she wanted, yet it didn't feel sexually aggressive because it wasn't. She was literally experimenting like a scientist in a lab. There was some part of me that liked that she felt safe enough with me, to be honest. I knew it was because she knew we both wanted zero romance. That was the catalyst that had given her the idea to go after the kiss last time, but something about it felt good. After the waitress walked away, Sophie looked at me, and I could tell she was waiting for me to comment. You were really great with Ashley at the wedding, I said instead, unwilling to discuss sex with Sophie out of fear we'd end up at the seedy motel next door. I seriously think she would have married that douchebag if you hadn't been there. She bit her lip, her smile wavering as she ran an index finger over the side of her water glass. It's hard to make the decision to walk away, even when it's the right thing. You're not over him yet, are you? I asked, bothered by the furrow between her eyebrows. She looked sad, and I didn't like it. Stuart? She cleared her throat and shrugged. I'm over him. I don't want him back, but I don't know if I'll ever be over us. I get that, I said, feeling the sentiment down to my fucking bones. Do you? She asked, sounding sincere. Because I'm not sure I do. Like, when will I stop being shocked by how full the medicine cabinet is, now that it's Rose and Larry living with me instead of Stuart? Or how quiet it is when I get home from work? When will the damn theme song to The Office not make me sad? Why can't I not care about all the little things that pop up on a daily basis and remind me of what I thought we'd be? Because it was your whole world, I said. Every moment of every day belonged to the two of you, together. So how do you not feel a loss when those moments are only yours now? Sophie's eyes narrowed, and she just looked at me for a minute before putting her chin on her fist. What was her name? The cliche. Stop. I got out of the booth, took off my jacket, and held it out to her. Put this on before you freeze to death. What? Her eyebrows screwed together, and she looked baffled. I gestured to her arms. You're covered in goosebumps. Her eyes got even squintier behind her glasses, and I fully expected her to ignore the jacket entirely and lecture me. But she held out a hand instead and said, Thank you. I sat back down. You're welcome. She slid into the jacket, which was huge on her, just as the waitress brought over our food. I foolishly thought the discussion was over, but as she squirted ketchup on her burger, Sophie asked me, So are you over your us yet? For the most part. Fuck me. I didn't know shit about Sophie, not really, so I didn't understand why I had shared that. She took a huge bite of her burger, then said as she wiped her hands, Does that mean it doesn't hit you in the gut every day anymore? I nodded and picked up a French fry. It means I almost never think about her.
Really?
Her face brightened a little. So there's hope. There's hope, I promise, I said, compelled to reassure her as I cut my double cheeseburger in half. Now, I have a question for you that I hope doesn't piss you off.
Sounds promising,
she muttered, licking a dab of ketchup off her finger. Hush. I set down my knife and picked up my burger. So, how can you not believe in love when it's so hard for you to move on? It seems like you must have loved the guy for it to hurt so much. No, she insisted, shaking her head emphatically and making a face. It was clear she'd given this a lot of thought. Incorrect. I trusted him, I liked him, I was intimate with him, and I planned a future with him. He destroyed all of those things, which destroyed me. Doesn't mean it's love. I wanted to point out that she'd just described love, and the only difference was what she was calling it. But who was I to throw rocks at her belief system? I might not agree with her, but I also had no interest in looking for love myself. So we weren't really that different. Same endgame.
What the hell are you doing all the way out here, Parks?
I looked up, and Don Howell, one of our project managers, was standing beside our table with his wife. I glanced at Sophie before saying, Hey, Don. We had a thing in Everstom, and now we're starving. This is my friend Sophie. Sophie, this is Don Howell. We work together. And this is his wife, Barb. Hi, nice to meet you, she said, smiling at them. And Barb beamed back at her with a huge hi, as if Sophie had been sent to Earth to save us all. Barb was one of my mother's best friends. We'll let you get back to your dinner, Don said, but we thought it was you and wanted to say hi. I'm glad you did. Nice to see you, Barb.
You too, Maxie.
As soon as they walked away, Sophie said, You told me Maxie isn't your name. When did I say that? At the hotel, after my wedding.
We got pretty hammered that night, I said, barely remembering the walk back to my hotel room.
Yeah, we did, she said. I don't even remember you leaving.
My phone buzzed and I pulled it out.
Mom,
Barb thinks she's gorgeous too. Hope you're having fun.
Are you kidding me right now? I muttered, glancing out the window as Don and Barb pulled away.
That didn't take long.
Problems? Sophie asked, reaching across the table to take one of my fries because she'd finished hers.
Barb has already texted my mother to tell her I'm on a date.
Is that bad? She asked, dipping the fry into my ketchup.
It is when we're talking about my mom. It's giving her false hope.
Oh, so you've got one of those mommies who wants to marry you off, huh?
Not necessarily marry, but yeah, there's definitely pressure for me to find someone.
Just be fine with disappointing them, Sophie said, popping the French fry into her mouth.
That's what I do. Every month when my grandchildless parents call me, I remind them that I have no interest in ever settling down, just so they have realistic expectations.
You only talk to your parents once a month? I couldn't imagine.
We aren't close, she said, shrugging like it was no big deal.
But we're talking about your disappointed parents, not mine.
It's not just about my parents' expectations.
I don't know why, but I sat there in the vinyl booth and told her everything. I told her about my job, my happily married sisters, and the fact that my parents wouldn't move on with their lives until I was taken care of. So this, I gestured to the two of us, this just gives them false hope.
Can't you fib, though?
Have a girlfriend in Niagara Falls or something? Sophie picked up her soda and took a long sip through the straw, and I wondered if there was something wrong with me for being distracted by her lips so often. She said,
Like, not lying, but can't you let them think that you're seeing someone with serious potential, and then when they move be like, oops, we broke up?
You want me to catfish my parents?
Sort of,
she shrugged. Once they're happy in retirement land, you can let them know that you are happy without the whole family and kids thing. Just give them enough comfort to make them move.
I wish it was that easy, but we're pretty close. It isn't realistic that I'd be seeing someone and have zero proof.
I shook my head and said, My dad actually asked me to milk our friendship and let my mom think it has potential, all so he can buy a boat.
Our friendship? She asked, narrowing her eyes and pointing back and forth between us with her index finger and pinky, just like the groom had done.
Yes, Spider-Man. She winked and said, do you know what milking entails exactly?
What are you thinking, Steinbeck?
Well, what if we both milk the friendship? She asked, her face instantly changing into strategic planner mode. Think about it. We could literally say we're just friends to everyone, so we're not lying, while just being friends. You know, like hanging out and randomly posting photos of us together on social media.
That doesn't seem like a solid long-term plan, does it?
Oh, it's not. But we don't need long-term. We just need to do it long enough for everyone to get that, haha, sure, they're just friends, smirk on their faces, while they stop worrying about our love lives and give us what we want.